Every child deserves to have a place to play, and children with disabilities are no exception. This hour, we'll talk about the importance of play for all children and how play can be used as a therapeutic tool. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. A new, completely accessible playground is being built in Iowa City. It will be the fourth playground that meets these standards in the state of Iowa. Today, we'll talk about what it takes to design a playground where all children can play and why creating opportunities for play is so important for children with disabilities. We'll also talk about play therapy for children with disabilities and other challenges as well. Join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We all know that kids love to play, but research also shows us that kids need to play. And that goes for all kids, no matter what challenges they may face. This hour, we're going to talk about the importance of play and efforts to make play accessible to all children. A new, completely all-inclusive playground is being built right now by the Arc of Southeast Iowa in Iowa City. This will be the fourth playground in Iowa that meets these standards. There are a few other all-inclusive playgrounds in the works and many other playgrounds with accessible components, but it's still difficult for parents and caretakers of children with disabilities to find playscapes that work for their children. As the hour goes on, we hope that you'll join the conversation as well with your experiences and your questions. 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And we're going to start the hour with Georgia Ludeking. She's the quality assurance specialist at the Arc of Southeast Iowa. She's also been very involved with making this playground a reality. Georgia, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you. Good morning.
And for people who aren't familiar with the Arc, give me a little bit of background. What is your organization?
We are an organization, a nonprofit organization, that provides care to individuals with disabilities. We provide care to individuals as soon as they're born and up to retirement age. Originally started in 1957, it was formed by a group of parents who were looking for another way to serve their children who had disabilities rather than institutionalizing them. And they wanted to provide that service to those children in their homes, keep them in the homes and in the community. And with that mission, we've kept that mission since 1957, providing cares in the home, serving not only the client but also the family in the community.
So where did the need for this playground come from? What sparked this effort?
Part of it was expansion of our programming. We decided to include an after-school program for our clients because of another program that was not able to continue that service. And it's a service that was needed in our area. There's a lot of adolescents with disabilities who aren't able to stay at home alone, and we needed a place for them to be after school if they aren't able to participate in those extracurricular activities or stay home alone. So we wanted an area for them to, or a place for them to go. And with that, we wanted an outdoor area where they could participate and play and learn and engage and educate in an outdoor natural environment as well.
Now, I know that you got a significant grant to build this playground. When you're designing a playground where all children can play, what are some of the, I mean, obviously you need to have wheelchair accessibility, but take us further. What other things do you need to think about?
We thought about just different types of equipment that you find at regular playgrounds that aren't accessible to children. Slides are not accessible to children in wheelchairs. Some of the climbing walls and those types of things aren't accessible to children in wheelchairs. So there's a lot of playgrounds out there that kids in wheelchairs aren't able to access. And we wanted to have different components. So we have play panels that the individuals can go onto the play equipment with other kids, interact with those kids with those different play panels, with sound boards, musical panels. There's a really cool feature called a sway fun, which is a wheelchair accessible teeter totter, is kind of what it sounds like or what it looks like. It's accessible. It gives a different experience to a child in a wheelchair who hasn't had that experience before.
And in designing this, I mean, obviously you want to not just make it accessible for all children, but fun for all children as well. And this is a playscape that will be open to the public.
Absolutely.
So how do you balance what you see on a normal playground and the things that kids have come to expect in a playscape if they have average or normal abilities with the kinds of things to make it possible for children with disabilities to play alongside all the other kids?
It looks like a regular playground. It just has larger ramps and wider ramps for the kids who are in wheelchairs or walkers to be able to maneuver that playground. So if you're not a child with a disability, you wouldn't realize that it's an inclusive playground and that it's a different playground than any other playground.
So where are you at in the process of building?
We are in phase one. We're almost finished with phase one. We're ready to put the safety surface on the playground. And once we have that on, then we can go ahead and play on it.
All right. And when do you think that'll be?
Oh, I'm hoping within the next couple of weeks.
Very, very exciting. Are the kids getting excited?
Oh, they've been excited for the last 6 months and waiting for it to be built.
Well, I want to bring Tony Malkusik into the conversation here. He is the president of Abundant Playscape. So this is a professional interest of his, but it's also a personal passion. He is the father of five, including father of Anthony, a child with special needs. Tony, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you, Charity. It's great to be here.
Now, Anthony is your youngest child. Can you tell me a little bit about him?
Yeah, Anthony was born hypotonic. He was a low muscle tone, floppy baby. We didn't know what specifically was his item or his issue or his challenge, but we knew something was there. We knew something was happening. So we actually ultimately found out that he has something that's called Soto syndrome, where he has – it's a deletion of a particular gene, but he has cognitive delays, he has communication delays, and he has physical delays. But the thing about Anthony is – from day one, he responded to music, and he also is something, movement of things, banners and flags and kites and things also stimulated him, as well as, movement, like he can manipulate water and sand. Those are all things that any child can do. So we knew that from a play perspective, Anthony was typically developing, but with his special needs, you know, chronologically, he should be in fourth grade now, but cognitively, he's not quite there, but with these programs and with places like the ARC and, you know, Iowa City and Iowa itself is such a great place to live because there's so many resources and programs to help us families with, you know, children with Anthony. There's so many other children that not only this play environment, but the programs and such that are available have been an immeasurable success in helping Anthony in his development.
And how long has Anthony been going to the ARC?
He's been there about two and a half years. When they started their new after-school programming, he was at another facility. And thank goodness for the ARC having that particular program. And some of the people that they have there are terrific in terms of how they work with Anthony. It's been, again, from standing off in the background and just seeing how the interactions are and seeing Anthony continue to develop and grow, it's been very satisfying for my wife and I and his siblings, too.
Now, of course, as a father of five, I mean, I'm sure your household was a little chaotic and very fun when Anthony came along. I know a lot of parents of children with special needs. I mean, there are so many things to worry about with your child's health, with your child's development. Where does play fall on that list? I mean, I'm sure that when you're trying to make sure that a child's getting the proper nutrition and getting the proper care and getting to the doctors and seeing different specialists, that play falls pretty low on the list.
Well, we try to hope that play is somewhere up in that list. It's intrinsic to all of us, and we try to, as best as we can, have play an important part, our outside environment where we live. Even inside environment, we try to do certain things, but it's just one of those juggling acts that every family has to deal with in terms of things. And Anthony, you just with his special needs, it's just part of our day-to-day existence, and you just go with it.
Well, and I'm sure having four older brothers and sisters play, not having play was not an option, right?
Well, that's true, and they've been a blessing for Anthony, for us to have with Anthony. We rely on them quite a bit, and it's amazing to see the relationships that happen and occur and develop because of their working with Anthony and playing with Anthony and doing all that.
Well, Georgia, in your work with the ARC, I mean, most of the children that you work with probably are not the fifth child in a family. Do you sometimes have to talk with people and say, you know, your child needs to be having fun? This is important, not just that they're safe and well-fed and well-cared for.
True. Many kids in general just learn by watching others and by mimicking others and copying others. And if you don't have five brothers and sisters to learn some of those behaviors from, it's important to socialize with your peers. So some of our after-school programming, our group respite programming, this encourages those families to bring those kids so they can socialize with other kids and learn how to play appropriately and learn how to take turns and learn how to greet people. And doing that, providing those programs for those families, offers those kids that opportunity to learn through play.
And do some children who come to you have to learn how to play?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Some of them, you have to teach them when to take turns and teach them how to appropriately use a different one toy versus another toy. Absolutely. A lot of mimicking going on.
Now, with the going back to the playscape, and Tony, I'd love to get your input on this as well. When you're designing a playground, of course, you know, as an adult, you look at it, it looks fun. But when you're designing it, do you try to create areas where it's more about engagement and less about what the playscape looks like?
Absolutely. We kept that was at the back of our mind the entire time we were building this playground. We wanted it to be fun for everybody, and that didn't. We weren't necessarily focused on just individuals in wheelchairs. We weren't focused on just individuals with disabilities. We wanted it to be an inclusive playground for anybody in the community to come and play on, and so that we had to look at a lot of different equipment, different types of play structures to figure out what was going to be best for our community.
And Tony, when you're building a playscape, how do you decide what to put in it? Do you look at research about different engagement and how kids respond to different components?
Research is one of the things that we look at. The other thing is getting involvement with the children and the community as part of the design process. On a lot of projects, I insist to get input from children. It's actually a lot of fun to see you bring in a lot of loose parts and different things for the children to play with to expand their mind and then engage in a little bit of a dialogue. We get input from the adults and work that with the research. And then I have a couple of other little ingredients to make sure that we put into the environment itself in terms of having spaces that children is scaled to their needs, cozy spots, for instance. Also having lots of loose parts or an abundance of materials or experiences like on the ARC playground. And then the other thing is to provide the children the opportunity, time to really engage in that. Getting engaged into a play episode just doesn't happen overnight. It happens over a period of time.
Mm-hmm. We're going to take a short break. We'll be back in just a moment. We're talking about the importance of play this hour, this conversation inspired by a new all-inclusive playground being built in Iowa City. Georgia Ludekin is here from the ARC of Southeast Iowa. Tony Malkusak is also here. He's the president of Abundant Playscapes. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour, we're talking about the importance of play and the importance of play for all children, no matter what challenges they may face. We've been talking about a new all-inclusive playground being built by the ARC of Southeast Iowa in Iowa City. It'll be the fourth playground that meets these standards in the state of Iowa. There are a few other all-inclusive playgrounds in the works right now. We'd love to hear from you this hour as well. If you are a parent of a child with special needs, you work with children with special needs, or maybe you have some disabilities yourself and have had some frustrations growing up not having access to some of the other things that the other kids get to do. We'd love to hear your story and your thoughts and your questions. You can join us at 866-780-9100, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me right now, Georgia Ludekin. She is a quality assurance specialist at the ARC in Southeast Iowa and has been very involved in making this new playground a reality. Tony Malkusak is the president of Abundant Playscapes. He's also a father of five, including Anthony, a child with special needs. And I want to turn the conversation before we talk more about play therapy and opportunities for play. with children. I want to talk to you, Tony. With your playscapes, integrating them into the natural environment is a very important part of what you do. Why is that essential in your mind?
Well, all of us need a sort of connection to the natural environment. There's so many wonders and the awe and inspiration of just waking up and seeing, oh, a bird fluttering by or a butterfly, a new flower, or anything. It awakes and arouses the senses. And tapping into that through play, I think, is a very easy avenue for children and even adults, for that matter, to get that connection, because there's so many things out there. It's a dynamic space. It's not necessarily a static where it's always the same. It's always changing. And having that available for children, I think, is very important. You know, there's research out there in terms of, you know, allergies and good bacteria and all that other type of stuff. That's, you know, well and good. But having the ability to manipulate and structure and construct your environment and using the natural pieces and elements, I think, is very important.
And Georgia, is that something that is challenging for children with disabilities to really interact with nature? I mean, a lot of it is not necessarily accessible.
I think it is a challenge. We also have a lot more of our parks are there are a lot less trees in our parks, and it's a lot more the concrete play area. You have the swings, you have the slides, and there's not a forest to go or a creek to go stomping through, which some of us did as kids growing up, and is a very valuable play component. And so it is harder for individuals who have, and maybe it's an unsteady gait that they have when they walk. It's not easy for them to go take a hike through a park in the city, even on a trail, because that trail is not necessarily even or paved for them. So it's harder for them to interact with their natural world just in general. So creating that place where they can interact with natural entities is very important.
And how have you tried to achieve that with this new playground?
Phase two of our recreational area is going to include a sensory garden that's going to include a lot of plants that will stimulate the senses, whether it's the sense of smell, the sense of sight, being able to touch different plants and interact with them and hold them, being able to learn how to grow, get your hands dirty, plant some seeds and pick some vegetables, and just that whole process. We want to include that so that our kids have that opportunity to experience nature.
Now, with a lot of care facilities, a lot of them have playgrounds, of course. A lot of those playgrounds are surrounded by fences, which mm-hmm. also is understandable in many cases. You wanted this playground to be accessible to the public. Why is that important to you?
We think it's important for all kids to play, and we want one of our a big part of our programming is that our kids are able to relate to their peers and interact with them socially appropriately. And opening it up to the community not only makes our community a better place and also offers a place for anybody of any ability level to play, but it also offers our kids that chance to interact with kids that are like them as well as different from them and learn how to play and socialize with each other.
And Tony, of course, again, in your household, Anthony gets lots of opportunities to play with other kids. But why do you think it's important for your child to have an opportunity to interact with kids of all ability levels in a playground?
Well, I'll start out actually with our older children. Actually, I think it's been a blessing for them to have Anthony as a younger sibling, because now they know how to act and how to approach and mentor and socialize with a person with a disability. That's been a blessing in one way from that perspective. And then Anthony, shoot, in an inclusive playground, Anthony actually is a peer. We've used that word a couple times in this conversation. It's really true. In his school, again, chronologically, he should be in fourth grade, but cognitively, he's doesn't have the ability to socialize. He's still working on putting together a full sentence in that. But in a playground setting, actually, he is able to play next to someone who's interested in the movement sensation of a swing, or stack some tree cookies, or run his fingers through dirt or something along those lines. He's actually there playing with somebody who doesn't look at him as a child with a disability, but just another person playing, interested in the same thing and engaging in what they want to do.
I want to broaden the conversation now and bring Bree Swope into the conversation. She's an instructor of therapeutic recreation at the University of Iowa. Hello, Bree.
Good morning, Charity. Thank you for having me.
Oh, thank you so much for being here today. And I know you've been involved with the work of the ARC, but you also are very involved in therapeutic recreation with many children. Tell me a little bit about this field, because it's not a term that I think a lot of us are really familiar with.
That is very true. So I would be honored to be able to talk a little bit about therapeutic recreation. So therapeutic recreation, it's the purposeful use or enhancement of leisure. It's using leisure or recreation as that modality, as that way to maximize a person's overall health, well-being, or quality of life.
And how did you get involved with it?
I began volunteering at the Children's Hospital and became involved with play and working in the child life specialist field and volunteering, and decided that I just really wanted to go back to school after having my undergrad here at the University of Iowa, and doing some research and some job shadows and learning about different fields. I found therapeutic recreation and knew this was the field that this was my calling, that I fully believe in the importance of play and the use of leisure and the use of recreation, and how important it is in our lives and just how it really can be a great benefit to our health and well-being.
Did you have a moment as you were deciding what you wanted to dedicate your life to? Was there a moment where you sort of realized how powerful this could be for a child?
Absolutely. I think there's several instances that come to mind in working with various. I've worked with kids throughout my. That's kind of been the population that I've worked with. But therapeutic recreation, one of the beautiful things of it is that it can be with all ages and several different populations. But in working with different kids and using play, I was establishing that rapport and just being able to urge a child who is nervous or scared or a little apprehensive to interact just by having some bubbles or just by bringing a ball or just having that piece of play really is so important in establishing that relationship and building that rapport and then getting to that therapeutic piece that you really, really are trying to get at.
Now, I know you must have thousands of stories, but can you pick one to tell us about? Because a lot of people, I think we do just take the importance of play. We just take it for granted. We don't think about it because it's something that children naturally do if they can. So can you tell me about one child in particular where you saw play really make a difference?
Yeah, absolutely. I worked at, prior to working at the University of Iowa, I worked at North Central Junior High School as a student and family advocate and worked quite often individually with kids as well as in group settings. And one particular was really having some difficulties in opening up and sharing sharing some of those experiences with some different people. And so we met. This student came into my office and we started playing. Are you familiar with Jenga?
Yes.
It's one of my favorite games.
All right. And Jenga is that balance game. So you have all the sticks piled up and you pull one out at a time and see if you can keep it standing.
Yep. Yep. Okay. And then it tumbles down at the end. But one way that I adapt Jenga is by writing questions onto the Jenga pieces. And so some of the questions, I am a good friend because maybe I would like to learn how to. One of my favorite outdoor activities is I sometimes worry about. So just kind of having different questions that can be pointed towards whatever it is that we're going to be working towards. And through playing this Jenga with this student, she was able to open up and start talking, and really we were able to get much more information and get to the meat of what was happening, and then we could really start developing and start creating some of those resources and some of those things that were needed for her.
Now, I can imagine some people thinking, well, all right, this is a junior high student. Why can't you just ask them those questions? Why does it work so much better to have a child open up through play?
That's a very good question. It is just asking that question point blank is very often I would see nerves rise, anxiety would start heightening, but just bringing in that idea of play, having that medium, having that something that's familiar to a child, that's familiar to a junior high student, something that can break down that little barrier. Really, they're so receptive to that idea of play. That's something that's familiar. They've known that. They've played Jenga perhaps before, or bringing in an activity, or bringing in something that they're familiar with, that they enjoy doing, and knowing some of those activities. Then through that conversation, it really is a powerful tool versus which just asking some of those questions, you do get valuable information. But through play, I feel that I've been able to really access a much deeper level of information.
Well, and of course, anybody who's ever spent time with a teenager knows that they're pretty good at putting up self-defense mechanisms too. So does this kind of help you break through those barriers?
Yes, it very much does.
Now, when we were putting together this program and doing some research, you said that you can learn more about someone in an hour of play than in a year of conversation. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, that is actually a quote from Plato, and it is one of my favorite quotes, and one that we use here in our department quite a bit, because I believe that in observing play and in interacting with play and interacting with kids and interacting with adults when they're engaging in those leisure activities or those play activities, you can learn so much about their physical abilities, their emotional, their social skills, their communication skills, just by watching and interacting through that play.
Now, of course, you can find out so much more about a child quickly through play. How mm-hmm. about kids connecting with each other? And, mm-hmm. you know, you can tell us about this, Bree, and then anybody else who wants to weigh in on this can as well. But when you see children playing with each other, how does that change the connection?
One example that comes to mind, that we just had a discussion about this with, I had a discussion with some of my students. I put up two images. One was a child that was playing a game on an iPad that they were able. It was a dress up game, so they're able to choose the color, choose the outfit, and so they're learning several pieces. They're learning to identify colors. They're learning to identify a sequencing of dress. So there's various aspects of learning through that app or that activity on the iPad. But then I also put up an image. Then I put up an image and had a discussion of kids that were in a setting or in a situation where they were actually dressing up. And once those kids are in that situation, there is that aspect of communication. Now they're going to have to ask each other or talk to each other and interact with each other. There's those social skills. They're going to have to take turns learning that interaction, learning that self-control, that self-regulation. If somebody else chose the hat that they wanted to wear, okay, how am I going to ask for that? They're just learning so many of those very important social skills that are just as simple as taking turns and cooperation. And I say just as simple, but are so meaningful when engaging in life activities and for future development.
Tony, you wanted to add something.
Yeah, I just wanted to say there's value in terms of the therapy, child relationship, and there's also value in a mentorship of older child and younger child relationship. Quick little story, case in point. Several years ago, we transformed our backyard into kind of a natural playscape. It was child-driven, child-directed, and we pretty much let the children, our own as well as the neighborhood children, do whatever they want in the backyard, within reason, of course. But what we did was allowed them to play with different loose parts. And actually, over a long period of time, it was amazing. They developed their own system of government with this play episode. I use a story of how this River Jack Rock transformed over a period of time, but system of transportation, system of government, monetary system, and they learned to work out interactions between each other. If there was conflict, they figured out how to, on their own primarily. In Europe, they have this concept of using play workers. And actually, one of my children, my oldest son, he was actually the play worker who was a mentor for a lot of the children. It was interesting to see the dynamic. They always got over their differences because the play itself and the interaction was more important than anything to them. So even in an unstructured way, there's learning that's going on as far as play being the epicenter. And then Anthony started to get involved, too, with things. That's when Anthony was really young. But it was amazing to see what happened in that environment as well.
And the empowerment, I'm sure, that he felt and all the kids felt.
Actually, all the children, yes, absolutely.
We're going to take another short break. We'll be back in just a moment. This hour, we're talking about the importance of play for all children. We're going to broaden the conversation a little bit more and dig deeper into play therapy in just a few minutes. We'd love to hear from you as well with your questions, your experiences, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. With me today, Bree Swope, instructor of therapeutic recreation at the University of Iowa. Tony Malkusak is president of Abundant Playscapes and a father of five. Georgia Ludekin is the quality assurance specialist for the ARC of Southeast Iowa and has been involved in building an all-inclusive playground in Iowa City. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. This hour we're talking about the importance of play and the importance of play for all children of all ability levels. With me is Georgia Ludekin. She's the quality assurance specialist at the ARC of Southeast Iowa and has been very involved in building an all-inclusive playground in Iowa City. Tony Malkusak is here. He's president of Abundant Playscapes. He's also a father of five, including a child with special needs. And Bree Swope is here. She's instructor of therapeutic recreation at the University of Iowa. And Melissa Weir is also joining us now. She's a registered play therapist and former president of the Iowa Association of Play Therapy. Hello, Melissa.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
Thank you so much for being here today. And Bree and I were talking about therapeutic recreation a little while ago. Is play therapy different? Can you give me a definition?
Yes, play therapy is somewhat similar to what Bree was saying, but also slightly different. Play therapists use toys because they are kind of the child's words. And play therapy is a form of therapy where the therapist can use the therapeutic powers of play to help the child resolve some sort of psychosocial difficulty or issue or emotional issue. And so it's actually a researched form of therapy and required to have lots of training and education and supervision to be able to conduct play therapy.
All right. And I know that probably play therapy takes a lot of different forms, but can you, if you are working with a child, can you kind of give me an idea of what a session would go like?
Yes. So to start with, the first part is the assessment process in which the therapist would observe the child's play, reflect on their emotions, track their behaviors, which just kind of means, you know, stating what you're seeing as they're doing through the play. The meat of the sessions, the part where you're working a little bit more on whatever the issue might be, those sessions typically are about 45 to 60 minutes long. And usually what happens is that the therapist and the child work together using the toys, trying to help change whatever issue might be going on. So the therapist might use some creative storytelling, and they would, together with the child, create a story that mimics what is going on with the child. And in the story, there are some coping mechanisms or problem-solving skills that the child can learn through the toys. And then the idea is that the therapist then helps the child generalize those skills that they've learned through that play session into their own life.
And what would bring a child to play therapy? We've talked a lot about children with disabilities this hour, but you don't work just with children with disabilities. What are some of the other challenges that would bring a child to you?
Correct. There are actually a variety of reasons a child might come for play therapy. Generally speaking, most children that are in therapy have some sort of emotional or mental health issue that is going on, or maybe a behavioral issue. And typically, children are referred to play therapy by, it can be just by their parents or somebody in the school or their physician or, you know, pretty much anybody. And we see anything from, I have worked with kids with disabilities who are just struggling with the emotional aspect of having a disability or some other chronic illness, to some anxiety, some depression, maybe some family system changes, and also as severe as trauma, such as physical and sexual abuse.
When you are working with a child and presenting them with opportunities for play, do you try to set up scenarios where you can observe what they understand about life through play?
Yes, that's pretty much yes what I would do. There are a variety of theories in play therapy, and so I can only speak really from, you know, my theory. There are some theories that are called child-centered and where they believe that the therapist is just there to be a support and point things out, and the child plays and the therapist doesn't interject anything. The theory that I go off on is called Adlerian play theory, and it's kind of more of a partnership. So the child and myself work together. So I might try to set something up so that I can observe their play and figure out what do they know, what are they struggling with, where are their strengths that I can build on. But I also wouldn't direct the entire session. I want them to have some control as well. I want to see, you know, what they know. So it's more of a collaborative approach.
So can you give me, for instance, something that you might do with a child who may be a child who's been neglected? What would you try to do to help learn about what they know?
Correct. So one of the things is making sure that you have the appropriate toys in your, you know, in your playroom to be able to use with the children. And so a lot of play therapists do. There's, you know, a lot of information out there about what toys are appropriate. So, for instance, a child who has been neglected, they may not understand how an adult can take care of them properly, or maybe they have taken care of younger siblings, so they try to be in charge of everything. So, for example, if you have a small play kitchen or food or pots and pans, you know, the pretend toy food, you can use that and set up stories and situations where you can help the child learn it's an adult's responsibility to take care of that need to make sure that you're well nourished and have the, you know, appropriate healthy food. And so you work together for the child to allow the adult to take care of them and nurture them in that way, and then also help the child deal with their emotions and their feelings of processing the fact that, you know, an adult is taking care of them now and they are no longer being neglected.
Now, since we've been focusing on children with disabilities, what makes this kind of work different with a child with disabilities? Are there some special concerns that you need to think about?
Well, and I focus more on the emotional and the mental health of a child. And so, yes, when we're dealing with a special need from that sense, you know, we have to really make sure that we're providing a very nurturing environment, very unconditional positive regard type environment, very open and loving and caring. We want the child to feel comfortable and to feel safe when they're coming to see us.
Children with disabilities often encounter just more frustration in daily life. Is that something that you need to think about when working with their emotional needs?
Yes, definitely. That's definitely something that we look at, and trying to help them normalize their feelings and then providing that support. And then the next step is also providing them with a number of coping mechanisms and coping skills so that they can deal with those feelings of frustration. So, you know, obviously we can't take away the disability, but what we can do is help them, you know, help them gain some acceptance of what is going on with their life. And then again, managing their feelings and being able to regulate their emotions related to the disability that they're dealing with.
Bree, I want to bring you back into the conversation. Now, I know that you've done a great deal of work in hospital settings, and when a child gets sick, I mean, that's sort of a brand new challenge, not necessarily something that the child has grown up with or dealt with a disability in the past. I'm sure a lot of parents and children, too, go into sort of it's a life or death kind of situation, and you need to focus on the child's health and the child's medical care. How important is play and having fun in that kind of situation?
Well, coming from the standpoint of, in addition to being a therapeutic recreation specialist, I'm also a child life certified as a child life specialist. And child life specialists use play as their modality, generally in hospitalized settings, to help reduce those anxieties and reduce that stress and build those positive coping skills through play. And so one of those examples of that is, as you may. Most people will probably agree a hospital setting is a very stressful situation for families as well as kids, and very scary, especially if they've never been to the hospital, if this is their first time coming in. So preparing kids for procedures that may be coming up, familiarizing kids with some of the equipment they may see. So if they're going to go into a procedure where they're going to have a blood draw, allowing them to explore and use a shadow buddy, which is kind of like a doll that you can show what's going to happen, so that the child knows going in what's going to happen, so they're prepared for the procedure that's coming up. And also just becoming desensitized to some of the equipment they may see, that it then does become familiar, and through playing with some of that equipment, through playing with maybe a syringe that doesn't have a needle, or playing with a stethoscope, or playing with some of that equipment prior to going in to a procedure, then they'll realize that, oh, I remember playing with that. That's not as scary as I may have thought without knowing before going into it. And then also during a procedure, if I know going into a procedure that a child does not like to watch a procedure, if they don't like to watch a blood draw, then putting up an I Spy book between where they're going to have that procedure and between there where they'll be able to see that, between blocking that visual. So then now we're going to play I Spy. I'm going to distract that child, and they won't see the procedure, so that won't induce that anxiety, and will really help build those coping skills for the child, so that it's not quite as stressful.
So taking away a lot of the fear and reducing the stress. Children who are dealing with significant challenges, whether that be a health challenge or a disability or emotional challenges or neglect or abuse or something like that. I mean, something that all of children in those different categories have in common is a difficult time often in making friends and having those kind of social connections. So, and maybe I'll go back to you, Georgia. I mean, in working with children at the ARC, is making friends, having those social connections, is that an essential piece of this puzzle?
Absolutely. We want children to be children and be able to play and have friends and experience that, have that experience of being a kid and not necessarily always only working with adults or only working with their parents or only working with their care provider. We want them to be exposed to kids and be a kid.
Is that sometimes a challenge for parents of children with disabilities to let go enough to let their child make friends?
That might be one of the issues, but I also think that sometimes it's just not having the resources available or the places available, not having the supports available to help you reach those goals of getting your kid to a place where they can socialize
Sure.
with other individuals.
Tony?
I was going to say, and that's why inclusive environments like what we're seeing at the ARC, and actually you're starting to see them butt up all over the state as well as the country, where we can seamlessly put in different things that are beneficial for any child, any ability, and even an adult for that matter. Mm-hmm. For instance, having shade in a playground area is something that's very important for all of us, especially in the summertime. But for those children who have difficulties regulating their own body temperature, having shade is something that's imperative to have. Having a little grotto or a cozy space is something for any child. I remember playing and manipulating something. My wife loved to read books underneath a pool table inside the house when she was growing up. But for a child who may be experiencing a sensory overload, having a little space to go and withdraw in those cozy spaces is something that's also beneficial. So it's something that becomes seamless across the board, and it's really, I'm excited and amazed in terms of some of the things that companies are coming up with product, fellow landscape architects like myself incorporating into a design. I'm excited for the future, as well as Melissa and Bree, what they help out with children in terms of having environments, you know, outside even just an indoor setting where they can bring children and experience play in an outdoor setting and use it as a therapy session as well. I think there's benefits all around. And I'm very excited for the future. I can't wait to get out right now, actually.
Well, we'll let you go in just 5 minutes, all right? But Melissa, you know, you mentioned Adlerian theory of play therapy. And this is an idea that's been around for quite some time. But it also seems to be an idea that is getting a lot more attention now. Do you think that that's an accurate impression?
Yes, I agree. I think that mental health in general is getting a lot more attention in society, and the importance of everybody, children and adults, just having good, you know, good mental health and good coping mechanisms to be able to use throughout their life.
And Bree, I'd love to hear your thoughts on that as well. I mean, is this a real area of growth in education? Do you find a lot more people wanting to become child life specialists and getting educated in this kind of work?
Absolutely. I think there's definitely a great increase in interest that we've seen both in child life as well as in therapeutic recreation. And with our therapeutic recreation program, we focus on the aspect of inclusive recreation. And I agree very much with Tony that it is very exciting for the future, and it is exciting to think about these aspects of inclusion and to think about ways that we can provide those equal opportunities for everyone of all abilities and disabilities, and so that everybody's able to participate together, and that we can form those common interests and focus on people's strengths and look at people for their individual strengths and build those social connections with each other.
When we were preparing for the show, I was kind of surprised looking around that this will only be the fourth playground in Iowa that meets these standards. And I understand that there are a number of other ones in the works. And we just got one an email about one being built in Cedar Falls. And I know Cedar Rapids is working on one. There are some all over the state, I think, springing up right now. But Georgia, were you kind of surprised that they're so rare?
I was surprised, and especially for the Johnson County, Iowa City area, who has such a large population of individuals with disabilities, that we don't have something like this already more readily available for individuals. I think it's going to be fantastic for not just the kids, but also the families and the communities in general.
And do you see this as a real trend? I mean, I mentioned that we're hearing about other ones, but is this exploding right now? Are we going to see
a lot more
playgrounds like this?
I sure hope so. I hope all playgrounds are accessible to everybody.
All right. And I know, Tony, this is something you've been thinking about for many years. Have you been a little surprised by how long it's taken to catch on?
Actually, in a lot of ways, yes, I have been. You know, every new playground needs to conform with the Americans with Disabilities Act. And that's really about physical barriers and removing those in spaces. You know, it talks about the space itself, but when we elevate the conversation to inclusive play, it actually brings in the human element into the space. So I'm excited that now, and like your show, and thank you so much for having this, because now we're getting that conversation out there. There's several groups of people who are dying to bring their children to these spaces, and if we can continue to get the word out, I think we'll do all good for everybody.
All right. Tony, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Tony Malkusak is the president of Abundant Playscapes and a father of five. Georgia Ludeking, thank you.
Thank you.
Georgia Ludeking of the ARC of Southeast Iowa. They've been working very hard on building an all-inclusive play space. Bree Swope, thank you.
Thank you, Charity.
Bree Swope is an instructor of therapeutic recreation at the University of Iowa. And Melissa Weir, thank you.
Yes, thank you for having me.
Melissa Weir is a registered play specialist. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbie.